The Normal Town Council has given a 3% raise to its city manager, approved a bridge repair, and signed off on a new apartment building on Locust Street. Here in studio to talk about those developments and more is Mayor Chris Koos of Normal. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most Tuesdays after their regular and special council meetings. The five-story apartment building in the 100 block of West Locust will replace three old and smaller capacity buildings. Tenancy will go from about 80 people to 126 people. The council granted a variance to have 11 fewer parking spaces than generally required. In return, the owners will create a circle drive in front for deliveries and ride-sharing pickups. The attorney for neighbors objected and said there's already a parking problem in the area. Your response to that?
I'm not quite sure how you would measure a parking problem in the area. Is it congested? Are there a lot of cars there? Yes. But, I mean, it's in probably 3-4 square block area of nothing but student apartments. So there are a lot of students there. But I don't see how this project is going to create a big problem.
Councilmember Karen Smith said if any place is right for a test of higher density and less parking and more reliance on walking and public transit, this is a prime location. What makes that a good spot for that,
well,
that sort of sensibility that she's articulating there?
I would say it's proximity to the university and the fact that it's R3B, it's the zoning on that, it's the highest density zoning that we have for residential properties in the area. All around there, you have the Lodge and other projects that have taken down older buildings and replaced them with taller, more dense buildings because of that proximity to the university. It's within walking distance easily to the university. And the other thing I think is important in this issue is these are some of the first student apartments that were built, and they're long in the tooth. And the owners of that property, faced with the idea of fixing them up, realized the cost was just going to be exorbitant. They would not be able to recover their costs, and it made more sense for them to build a new project.
Is a higher capacity the way to go, though, with the university already talking about a $90 to $130 million residence hall replacement project?
Again, Charlie, we're in a situation here where they could do a slightly different project and meet the parking code and build even more density by right without any input from the Normal City Council. I think their wishes were to build slightly denser, but staff discouraged them from doing so, and they were okay with that.
So the choice was this project or something that had less green space but higher density?
Correct.
So,
and it wouldn't have that drop-off feature.
Do you buy the argument that kids today or youth today, young adults today, are changing their habits, that they're not relying on cars as much, that they do rely on Uber and Lyft and other ride-sharing, and that they are getting more delivery? Is that a trend that will stick?
I think so. I think it will. In the sense of the cost of owning and operating an automobile, the fact that younger people are much more connected, and if they had an easy way to grab a bus to get from point A to point B and they had their cell phone texting away, I think they'd prefer that than driving. And one thing I have known for a long time, and it's true, because there are more apartments and people living closer to the university, I don't call it a parking issue. I call it a storage issue because most kids don't drive their cars that often. They sit, and they use them to go home on the weekends. If they have a job, part-time job, they may use a car to drive to a part-time job. But a lot of vehicles just sit.
So where should they be sitting?
I'm sorry?
Where should those vehicles be sitting?
With the advent of a more robust bus system, Uber, and that may be the choices. I don't need it. With Amtrak service to Chicago, where most of our students come from, the need seems to be less.
Five stories, versus low-rise. The apartment builders have trended, not just in this project, but for a number of years, maybe even upwards of a decade now, toward taller, bigger campus area developments. Does this place additional burdens on the town in emergency services? Tougher to fight a fire, requires more technical resources to do, higher power, water and trash removal service cost?
I don't think so. I think it pencils. The numbers pencil for the developers of those properties. They seem to do pretty well.
But in the case of a fire, the town would have to expend more resources to fight a fire at a bigger installation.
I wouldn't say necessarily, because the newer buildings are built to a more strict code than the buildings that were built in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. More modern materials. Bringing it up to fire code.
Yeah, firefighters have often said, though, that more modern materials means more toxic materials when they burn. So, but in general,
I'm not sure where you're trying to go with this.
Well, you're not buying the higher cost needs to be recovered premise of the question, I guess.
I can't think of a fire we've had in a structure like that, except I think 15 years ago. The one near the old city hall did burn down.
Then that was an old development, mm-hmm. The Vernon Stables, I think that was called.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Mayor Chris Koos of the town of Normal. City Manager Pam Reese received a 3% salary increase and a fair amount of love from council members last night. What has she done right in the last 2 years?
She's managed the city when she first came on in a very tough economic period. Reducing 25 full-time equivalent positions in the town. 40% of those positions were in her administrative offices, working with a very, very lean budget. She is responsive to citizens. She's responsive to council. She has the support and collaboration of her department heads. She's a very, very skilled manager.
How does the 3% compare to cost of living adjustments in the rest of the town staff? Little higher?
I think slightly higher. I think I can't tell you exactly, but I think the cost of living adjustments were in the high 2% range.
So she's the only employee of the council,
correct,
per se. So is she worth more than the rest of the staff?
I'm not sure how to quantify that, define worth more.
A higher, the increment between whatever the cost of living increase was in the high twos and the 3% that she got. Is she
worth
that extra
margin? Well,
we may
be talking 2-3 tenths of a percent difference. I think that's splitting hairs.
But it's not just the percentage. The new salary tops $190,000. 3% at that ballpark salary is bigger than 3% for a rank-and-file town worker. The issue of high-wage workers diverging from median-wage worker compensation, halves having more, is not mm-hmm. new to the country, not limited to the public sector. Should the town be working to compress salary variances instead of expanding them?
I think they are compressed, Charlie. If you take a look at Pam's salary compared to department heads, they're pretty close, especially with the seniority that she has and some of the senior department heads have. There's not that much disparity.
That's something you pay attention to in budget talks?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker with Chris Koos, the mayor of Normal. The council has also approved spending $785,000 in motor fuel tax funds to repair the Towanda Avenue Bridge and the Gregory Street Culvert over Sugar Creek. How bad off is that bridge?
Well, it's seen its life cycle. We had to defer replacement with I'd call it Band-Aid maintenance on some projects through the community. And as we are able to budget dollars, either from motor fuel tax dollars like this project or from our general fund dollars, we need to maintain our infrastructure as much as we possibly can. It was time to do this project.
So what is the life cycle? Unfortunately, I have been around long enough to remember the ribbon cutting for that bridge. So... So it's only order of 30 years.
Yeah, I would say it depends on where the bridge is. I mean, we're getting ready to do Glen Avenue Bridge replacement, and that bridge probably was done 50 years ago. It depends on how much traffic it carries.
And Towanda Avenue gets a lot of traffic.
It carries quite a bit of traffic.
Mayor Pete Buttigieg, shifting to politics now, has done very well in his campaign for president so far. When he first announced, I asked you about him and why someone would try for that without higher-level elected experience and little prospect of success. You said you were familiar with him from the U.S. Council of Mayors. You said he's the real deal, and regardless of the end result, no one should take him lightly. He is a serious person. This is your opportunity to say, I told you so. All right. He's laughing, right. But he's not piling on. All right.
Well, you know, I got to know Pete pretty well through the Conference of Mayors. The person you see on stage is the person you have a conversation with when he's talking. Pete's a very intelligent, thoughtful man. People criticize him for not having a lot of political experience. The man he would run against, if he wins the nomination, had no political experience.
The snarky ones in the room would argue that intelligent and thoughtful is almost a disqualifying characteristic for politics. But so why do you think he has had such good results so far?
And this is something that I kind of like him for, because he's a mayor, I'm a mayor, and I know what we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so you're faced in a situation where he was a strong mayor, so he was the manager and the mayor at the same time. You have to make hard decisions every day and see that they get carried out. And so that's something that kind of misses in federal politics, and that where there's not a strong sense of we need to get this done.
How's he going to do in Illinois?
You know, I'm not a pollster or a political analyst in that, but I think because Pete's somewhat of a moderate, he appeals to the older demographic in both parties. I know a fair number of Republicans who are what I would consider moderate Republicans. I call them McLean County Republicans that like Pete. They like what he has to say. They like his sensibility.
Should he be a guide for people in the rest of the nation that say this sort of thing is possible? Is he a guide for other mayors? Is he a guide for other potential office seekers? Or is he really still an outlier?
Ask me that question November 12th.
Okay. Well, we'll have to see. We'll even defer till after the March 17th primary here in Illinois. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, and Mayor Chris Koos is chatting with us about various issues. Let's move on to something else. Technology, 5G technology for phone is coming to take us up from about 150 megabytes per second in transmittal power from the current 3G, 4G system, and up to, you know, more than a gigabyte and a half per second. What will that do to municipalities or for municipalities to have that increased capacity?
Well, I think it's, you know, what it does for the businesses and the people and the educators within that municipality. It broadens their reach to the world, their ability to do business, their ability to do research, increases exponentially.
The cities that are going to get it are the bigger ones with a more exploitable market for the devices that can be sold. Does the town of Normal have an idea when it's likely to deploy in cities the town size?
I don't think so at this point. I think the issue that faces municipalities across the United States is control of their rights of way. We lost that battle with fiber, we have no control over fiber installation. It's kind of unnerving to me. I think I've witnessed the seventh or eighth fiber installation along Vernon Avenue. Vernon Avenue, near the university, is almost constantly
dug up
because of the next fiber company is coming in and running fiber. And we have no control over that. And, you know, they're generally reputable people when they're doing that. But they could pierce a sewer and they wouldn't know it and we wouldn't know it until it became a problem. So the idea that a municipality has some control is the important issue for us now. Now, 5G is small cell deployment.
More little antennas.
Yeah, lots of little antennas.
You know, for someone like former council member Garrett Scott, who was death on signs, that's got to be an unsettling prospect.
Well, and municipalities are very concerned about what it's going to do to the streetscapes of their communities and want to be able to have some control over that, because there are examples of very, very thoughtful 5G rollout, and there are some examples of some very horrible 5G rollout.
So who's doing it right, and what do you have to do to get it right?
I couldn't. I've just seen images. I can't tell you which communities were which on that.
So the town is a few years away from having to consider this sort of plan or these sorts of ordinances to regulate antenna installations?
I think so. I think probably 2 years before we really start looking at it.
Another aspect of 5G that the town may wish to concern is that the devices that facilitate 5G, that use it, are likely to be more expensive. And
correct.
So the haves and the have-nots are going to further diverge. Is there something the town should do or on that front?
Well, that's something we need to look at. I mean, this is issues that we had when cable companies came to town, when companies like Metronet and Comcast started going to fiber in the community. These are issues we'll probably deal with in our One Voice trip to Washington coming up next month, in the sense that we're two of our initiatives are smart cities, and this is fact-finding and talking to federal agencies. And the other one's rural broadband. And, you know, the point you brought out about haves and have-nots is the fact that this technology is going to go where there is density of population. And the rural people could get left behind on that.
What stake does the town of Normal have in advancing rural broadband?
I think it's by being a good neighbor. I think it's important that we take a regional view of where we live and not just what's good for Normal is good for Normal and everybody else will take care of themselves.
So what sort of policy would encourage that?
I think being supportive, working with the Economic Development Council, organizations like Serban and that. Serban does quite a bit in the rural areas. Being a cooperative partner.
So if someone says, hey, Town of Normal, we want permission to install antennas all over town for 5G, would the town say, yes, but we want some digital equity considerations involved, and you should also consider rural areas surrounding the town? Is that a bargain you could strike?
Maybe. You know, it's hard to speculate on what bargaining power we would even have. I mean, we could quickly be preempted by the state or the federal government from even being involved in that decision. And that's the issue we're facing right now.
You can always be trumped.
Mm-hmm.
And no, that was a card reference, not a political reference
right.
There. Me and my mouth. All right. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most Tuesdays after their regular and special council meetings. Mayor Coos, thanks for your time today on Sound Ideas.
Thanks for having me.